Can I approach?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Good morning. Mike Hunsinger, on behalf of Bel Air and Briney, Roger Bel Air and Nick Briney, both of whom are present in the courtroom, I ask to reserve 4 minutes.
4 minutes?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I'm going to first of all thank the court for giving us a heads up on a couple of issues that it would like to address. With respect to the merger issue, the merger does not apply in this case for two reasons. First, merger must involve a junior interest that preceded the conveyance. An example is a tenant renting property, then buys the property, the lease later buys the property, the lease gets extinguished, the tenant owns the property. Here, the allegedly equitable lien was created simultaneously with the conveyance. Second, in the state of Washington, where mortgages are involved with a merger, that only occurs if the person who is owed the money and buys the property intends to merge, and there's no indication that that was the case here. However, it ties into a very important aspect of this entire case, which is how does a party who paid off a debt that is no longer owed, that party owns the property, secured by this equitable lien now, and is able to foreclose on that lien that was not in default and wipe out the junior lien holder's $143,000 that it didn't get only because the owner's property's title insurance company made the mistake. And I'll address that, which ties into that second question.
Both the equitable subrogation and the foreclosure of the equitable lien, or just the latter?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Are you disputing both the equitable subrogation
right.
and the foreclosure of the equitable lien, or
yes.
just the latter?
No, both. And both because of the law actually cited very correctly by the City of Kent in its respondents' brief, which the Miller and Briney wholeheartedly agree with. Page 6. The court determines whether application of the doctrine of equitable subrogation, this is the phase one ruling, the first ruling, prevents a windfall for the party objecting to the application of the doctrine, i.e., the junior lien holder, Bel Air and Briney, prevents a windfall, and will not materially prejudice the party objecting to equitable subrogation. Again, Bel Air and Briney. So if this court concludes there either is no windfall that was avoided, or that Bel Air and Briney's interests were materially prejudiced, then the trial court was wrong in either of the rulings and must be reversed.
Why would there be a windfall in this case?
Arguably, one could argue that there was a windfall avoided with respect to the underlying first ruling, because that would have allowed Bel Air and Briney to move from second position to first position, and that's what gets all the courts all riled up. And for the purposes of this hearing, I'll be willing to concede that that would have been a windfall that was avoided. However, with respect to the first ruling, there was materially prejudiced interest of Bel Air and Briney, very simply, for the following reason. Up to the morning before the sale, the Trans, who owned the property, were current in their payments to Bel Air and Briney, as well as presumably to the first. Why? Because the Trans had, we know, $50,000 in net worth that they wanted to protect, because that's how much they got from the sale of the property after paying off both debts, if in fact they had been paid off. Had the Trans been in default of a payment to Bel Air and Briney, Bel Air and Briney could have foreclosed and lost. The Trans would have therefore lost its $50,000. So there was $50,000 worth of incentive for the Trans to make those payments. The moment the deal closed, that incentive was drastically reduced, if not eliminated, because the Trans had the $50,000. They no longer had the property to protect their $50,000 net worth. They had the $50,000 in their pocket. Therefore, the consequence of them not making the payments was nothing more than Bel Air and Briney's right to sue Trans personally for the breach of that contract, or to foreclose on these other properties, which were so hopelessly underwater that it made no sense for Bel Air and Briney to do it. Materially prejudicial interest to Bel Air and Briney.
Notwithstanding your argument, illustration number 21 under
yes.
restatement of property third
yes.
seems to be factually the same as this case. That was a situation where they had a sale. There were two liens. The first was disclosed, the second was not. Nevertheless, illustration 21 says that equitable subrogation applies. Why shouldn't it in this case?
Because in page 26 of the respondent's brief, it properly stated that the case upon which that illustration was based was Dixon v. Thomas from, I think it was Tennessee or Kentucky. And here is what Dixon v. Thomas said was the reason why at page 563 that equitable subrogation was appropriate. The junior lien holder, the bank, suffered no loss or injury, neither was its position changed or its security impaired. It suffered no injury as a result thereof. The position of the defendants remained unchanged. Their security would be in no wise affected. And A, for the reason I previously stated, Bel Air and Briney's interest was dramatically affected. And I'll also point out to the court another statement made by the respondent in the brief, which is also accurate, and that is at page 22, which says that a junior interest is unaffected. This is trying to define material prejudice. A junior interest is unaffected if it remains in the position it bargained for and the terms of the senior interest are not changed to the detriment of the junior interest, such as where the terms of the refinance loan include higher interest or a longer loan term. Even the city of Kent says that if this was a refinance and the loan interest of the first, the interest rate or the length of the term of the loan was higher than it had been, that would have materially prejudiced Bel Air and Briney. In Kim v. Lee, the state Supreme Court ruled several years, just in 2001 at page 88, that where a first deed of trust holder had a six-year payment term for its note, that was replaced by a 30-year term, even with lower interest rate. That was enough to materially prejudice the second. This case presents a detriment multiple times greater to Bel Air and Briney. It didn't change the terms. It eliminated them so that the trans no longer had the incentive to even make the payments. And, of course, they didn't, and it went into default. On rebuttal, I'll address the issue regarding the second matter, which has to do with why in the world should the city of Kent be allowed to foreclose on this lien.
You have 3 minutes of rebuttal time after the opponents.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court, my name is Tom Peterson, and it's my privilege to represent the city of Kent. The fundamental question in every equitable subrogation case is, what party or who should rightfully assume the first lien position if it's been paid off? The party that paid off the lien or the second lien holder who did nothing? Bel Air and Briney is no different than any other second lien holder in an equitable subrogation case. There are two key issues that are focused on by Bel Air and Briney. One is that it will be prejudiced by equitable subrogation in this case. And secondly, that it has not been unjustly enriched. Bel Air and Briney is not prejudiced by equitable subrogation in this case. In the Newman Park case, the Supreme Court adopted the restatement second of mortgages, section 7.6, in total. And as the court, Judge Cox, pointed out, this case is extremely analogous to illustration 21 in the restatement. In that case, there were two mortgages. The mortgager sold the property, said he would pay off the first, didn't mention the second at all.
You agree under the restatement that the issue is whether or not subrogation is appropriate to the extent necessary to prevent unjust enrichment?
Yes. It is the purpose of it is to prevent unjust enrichment.
All right. And how does foreclosure of the lien in this case prevent unjust enrichment?
Both parties will foreclose. The reality of the lending situation in any lending transaction is that all lenders go into those transactions taking risk. The risk is that they may not get paid, their loan may not get paid back. And so if that happens, then lenders will foreclose.
Why should B&B foreclose? It's in a second position, and that is not changed by foreclosure. If they had a trustee sale under the deed of trust, there would still be a prior first lien, yours under subrogation. If it had a judicial foreclosure, the same result obtained. So why should they foreclose in practical terms?
They have no other remedy. Bel Air and Briney, why would Bel Air and Briney
right.
foreclose? Absolutely. That's their remedy, and that is what they have, in fact, initiated a foreclosure.
But my question is, what does that get them? Because your subrogated position mm-hmm. is still prior to them. They would
yes.
have to cut you a check in order to get any benefit from
that's,
that.
That's not true.
Well, explain it to me.
They would get title to the property. So they would foreclose. They would wipe out Kent. And Kent, as the owner of the property, would no longer own it.
Well, Kent is the title holder.
Correct.
I'm talking about your rights as subrogee.
Okay.
Subrogee has no obligation to provide clear title, and that appears to be what is accomplished by a foreclosure here. As far as I'm concerned, that's the only purpose of you foreclosing the lien, is to clear title. Your position as subrogee does not give you that right.
As subrogee, are you talking about Kent? Does Kent have the right
yes.
to foreclose?
Kent is wearing two hats.
Mm-hmm.
It's subrogated to the former first mortgage.
Yes.
That's one hat. The other hat, it's a title holder by virtue of the sale from Tron, right?
Yes.
As subrogee, the scope of your rights is defined by 7.6 of the restatement. And that says that subrogation is granted, and I quote, to the extent necessary to prevent unjust enrichment.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, why does foreclosure of your position as subrogee, why is that required to prevent unjust enrichment?
When Kent purchased the property, it did so with the intention that it was buying all of the property, subject to no liens or encumbrances. That was the intent going in. And so it is in fact subject to a second, at this point, it is subject to a second lien, which has the right to foreclose and take away Kent's title. So Kent can lose the title to the property if Bel Air and Briney foreclose.
The question is about unjust enrichment
mm-hmm.
and whether or not somehow Bel Air and Briney are unjustly enriched such that foreclosure is necessary. And that's what I'm not hearing in answer.
So they are unjustly enriched because if the old order of priorities remained, mortgage it in first and Bel Air and Briney in second, and time marched on and history happened the way it did, namely the market crashed, the value of the property went down, and presumably Tran paid neither party, Mortgage It would foreclose and wipe out Bel Air and Briney. There wouldn't be, and today there is not enough value in the property to pay off both
it
liens.
It seems to me that what you want is this. Based on your unilateral mistake, that you were getting clear title, you want to end up with clear title, which is more than the seller had to sell to you. How does equity give you more than you could buy?
Kent paid the full value for the property, and that was enough value to pay off all of the liens. So Kent, who is the party here?
And what you had to purchase was a property subject to two liens.
That's correct.
Right.
And
you didn't know that. You tell us that you only knew about the one lien. So we've got your unilateral mistake. You were going to get a property that was subject to the second lien.
Mm-hmm.
Why should equity put you in a better position by allowing you to foreclose and eliminate that lien?
Well, there's two parts. First of all, equitable subrogation does apply because of the Prestance case and because of the Newman Park case. So the law of Washington is that we are equitably subrogated, even though, if let's assume we did make a mistake, although I don't believe that Kent did make a mistake.
But what we're talking about here is
the foreclosure.
Is foreclosure.
Correct. So the first part of the analysis is, are we entitled to equitable subrogation? And clearly, under the law of the state, we are. So then the second is, what does a lien mean then? What is the significance of a lien if it doesn't have the ability to foreclose? It's a toothless tiger.
You're entitled to subrogation to the extent necessary to prevent unjust enrichment.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've not heard an answer to yet is how foreclosure prevents unjust enrichment on the part of Bel Air and Briney.
Because Bel Air and Briney will foreclose, and they will eliminate Kent's title.
Well, let me.
They have started a foreclosure.
Let me give you a specific example. Source Corp is one of the cases that you cite for another purpose. Mm-hmm. That's an Arizona Supreme Court case which adopted the restatement of thirds, same position as the Washington Supreme Court. In that case, there was a similar situation, right, where there was an attempt by the subrogation, the one holding subrogation, to basically have a share of sale and have a foreclosure. The Arizona Supreme Court denied that,
correct,
saying that that was not necessary to prevent unjust enrichment under 7.6 of the restatement. Why is that case any different from this one?
Well, I don't believe that Source Corp was correct in that part of the decision. And the reason is that if you have a lien and no right to foreclose, you have nothing at all. Okay?
Well, you have a lien by subrogated, but subrogation.
It's meaningless. It is absolutely.
It's not meaningless. If somebody came in to purchase the property from Kent,
yes,
that first lien would have to be paid, right?
If someone purchased from Kent,
yes, the title holder.
Kent would be, Kent's the owner of the property. It,
right,
would sell the property for the full amount of the value of the property if it were to sell the property.
Okay. And then the first lien position that Kent holds by subrogation would also have to be paid, right?
It would be released, yes, in that transaction.
And given your
but
comment,
Kent won't own the property because Bel Air and Briney will foreclose it. So
do you concede that if Bel Air and Briney commenced a foreclosure and carried it through to completion, that that property would remain subject to the first lien by subrogation?
It would remain subject to a lien in name only, and that lien would be completely worthless, Your Honor. It would have no value whatsoever. There would be no reason that anybody would ever pay it at any time in the future because there's no ability to foreclose it. That's all that a lien is. A lien is nothing more than the ability to enforce a debt. Absent the ability to enforce it, it is absolutely worthless. It's nothing.
Well, if a lien enforces a debt, what debt does the city of Kent own that is being enforced by foreclosure?
It owns the mortgage debt.
You have a judgment against the mortgagor, the money judgment?
No, it steps into the shoes of mortgage it, which has a contractual debt.
But no money judgment?
No money judgment. Well, there was a money judgment entered in this case.
A money judgment as a result of a foreclosure of the first position, or as a result of a default on the first position? Do you have a money judgment?
Not as a result of the default of the first position. The doctrine of equitable subrogation is that this purchaser steps into the shoes of the first lien holder and accedes to all of the rights of that lien holder and the right to foreclose it.
Are you aware of any case where a equitable lien has been foreclosed on where there was not a money judgment that was sought to be enforced?
Well, I assume in Coy versus Robbie and in the Chapman case, Olson versus Chapman, which we cited,
well, in
both
Olson
of those cases.
In Olson and Warden, there was a money judgment, was there not? They had paid, they were seeking to get their the taxes that they had paid to get that money back.
Mm-hmm. And it's the same situation. We're seeking to get the money back. Kent is seeking to get the money back that it paid to mortgage it, either through a clear title to the property or the ability to foreclose the mortgage it. It paid that money. It's going to lose if Bel Air and Briney forecloses, which they have already commenced a foreclosure. Kent will lose the title and all the money that it paid for the property. It will lose everything. So it will surely be prejudiced. But Bel Air and Briney will step into the first lien position fortuitously. It will have a windfall in that it will now have the ability to foreclose and collect its money, whereas in the prior set of circumstances, it would not be able to foreclose because mortgage it was in first position. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
The panel has obviously done its homework. Thank you very much. Number one, there is no monetary judgment. Judgment presented by the respondent, the monetary judgment is blank. Number two, all the cases where there was equitable liens, they all involved monetary awards, just like the panel said. Three, the lien is...
But the argument is that you will now be able to foreclose on the property, and you're in a position now that you were not in when Mortgageld held the mortgage.
Well, that's not true at all.
Let me just see if you can concede this. If you foreclose your second lien position, your second deed of trust, either by trustee sale or by judicial foreclosure, do you not take subject to the first subrogated position?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay.
Right. And the appellant, the respondent got an appraisal saying the property is worth $110,000. So someday, I mean, the first $200,000, if Bell and Bryant was lucky enough to get title to this property, still underwater by $100,000. That's best case scenario that Bell and Bryant could ever be in. And it's absurd for the city to say it would be unjust to give them that little crumb. But it's worse.
You would have title to the property and they would not.
That's correct. And we would then get to pay property taxes and wait for who knows how long for the property to be worth enough to sell to somebody who might, after paying $200,000 to the city, everybody may get some of the $143,000 that they lost because of the title insurance company's mistake. It's hard to find enrichment there, let alone unjust enrichment. But it's worse than that. It's worse than that because Beller and Briney, as a second deed of trust holder, they knew they were taking the risk of the possibility that if the first deed of trust went into default, that could be foreclosed upon. Mortgage it would foreclose and would probably wipe out Beller and Briney's second. That was the risk they took.
But let me ask you a question about sure. title insurance. Your clients didn't pay for title insurance.
That's correct.
And as far as I understand, they're not intended third-party beneficiaries of that contract between the title insurance company and the city of Kent.
Correct.
So what's the theory that entitles you to somehow enforce the idea that city of Kent has title insurance?
This is an equitable principle. This is equitable subrogation. The first sentence of every case says this is for the purpose of establishing equity, fairness. There is one entity that made a mistake that caused this problem. It's the title insurance company.
Okay. Do you have a case that supports your theory?
No, there aren't. There are no. However, the reason is because everybody's worried about affecting the title insurance industry. That's because where there's a windfall, title insurance should not have to be paid. It's only in these unusual circumstances like this unusual fact circumstance where equity can be done best by having the city of Kent completely compensated, Beller and Briney compensated a little bit by getting able to foreclose, and the perpetrators of the mistake who got the premium paid by the city of Kent should have to meet its contractual obligations.
Thank you, counsel. Time has expired.
Thank you very much.